you people, it is Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis offering another season of Broadcast Insolence. You know, in television, they always start the seasons in September,
yes.
Like you're going back to school.
Mm-hmm.
And I just figure in radio we should do the same thing. New
Good.
Season.
Happy new season for us. Yay.
Yeah.
And there's been a political earthquake in Chicago today of the 7.2 magnitude, I believe. I mean, this one is just shaking up everything, hasn't it?
By the way, I should point out that this would be a magnitude of 7.20.
Oh, perfect.
All right, so
he came back for the new season.
Yeah, he's back for the new season. He's the booth announcer for the new season. I don't know why they hired him. All right, anyway, the point is this. That Rahm Emanuel announces in a shocker to his staff, to his campaign people, to the donors who gave him $10 million, to all of his opponents who've been doing nothing but designing their campaigns to fight against him.
Totally. The messaging has all been, we're not Rahm Emanuel. And they've got to change that now. Well, not entirely, but that's a simplification. But it seems a lot of it has been just running against the mayor's record.
Well, I think they kind of do have to change that, don't they? Because what is... Well, I mean, without Rahm Emanuel to kick around anymore, as Richard Nixon would say, where are you? I mean, you know, it's sort of like, I mean, Willie Wilson, we've asked Willie to be on the show.
Sure.
And we're awaiting an answer.
We've also reached out to Vallis and Lori Lightfoot.
Gary McCarthy will be here in the 4 o'clock hour.
Many of the front runners will be speaking with.
Right. And we'll just have to see what all of this means, because it seems like. He was a guy, people are speculating. He was a guy that seemed destined to be doing this. You know, he already announced that he was going to be running for a third team. He was raising money as though he were going to be doing that. So what could have been in his mind here in the last couple of weeks that changed his mind? Are there poll numbers? Is there a concern about Laquan McDonald? Is there the concern about businesses here? Is the Amazon deal shaky or not going to come through? Is there something else going on in his personal life that we're unaware of? Is there some other story here that leads us to explain this? Because there's really not a good one.
It's interesting because I think this caught even many people who covered this particular beat for a living by surprise. It truly was stunning to hear this. I saw over the weekend Fran Spielman in the Sun-Times had an article about the mayor still weighing his options about whether or not to run. And I read that and I sort of thought, really? Is that possible at this point? As you said, he's done all the things to look as if he is ready to go at this point. $10 million. He's got his signature is being collected already. He's starting to put in his messaging out there. I mean, it looked as if he was doing everything, you know, focused on making that next run. And then this happens. You wonder what it is.
He didn't want to lose.
Well, that's, I think, probably the biggest. I think that is true. And I think that's the most obvious answer, right? That if he thought he was going to win and everything was going to be hunky-dory and he's going to be able to do all the things he wanted to do, then he would still be running. Yeah. I don't think he's seeking another office. I don't think it's sort of like, you know what I really want to be? I really want to be a county commissioner. Or, you know what I really want to be? I really want to be a U.S. senator. I don't think he's setting himself up for that. I mean, Durbin is up in 2020, right? Am I right about that? Someone double check that for me? But I believe one of them is up in 2020. It's got to be Durbin, right?
How many senators?
So, I mean, does he want to do that?
Yeah.
Does he want to run for? He doesn't want to run for gubernator because the gubernator is this year. So what else could he do? That guy, he knows it. I mean, I mean, it's like Rahm Emanuel is a very smart guy, right? This is not a circumstance where you have somebody who, you know, is kind of a half-wit. And there are a lot of politicians who are half-wits. Let's just be honest.
Well, I think that's a great point, Ro, because, I mean, I saw Crane Chicago Business had a very interesting article today, and it's worth a read. They're talking about how they're lamenting that he would not be the mayor for the future because he's been the city's business, the biggest business closer we've seen ever had, is the point of view of this article, that he has best friends throughout the tech community, throughout the business community. He can pick up the phone and get the CEO of Google or Amazon or any of these companies to pick up the phone and have that conversation with him. And do you have that moving forward? That kind of
ability. The interesting piece of Rahm Emanuel is Ari Emanuel, his brother. Because Ari Emanuel, who is the super agent in Hollywood now, and Hollywood isn't just making movies and TV shows anymore. Hollywood is about the tech companies. Hollywood is about, as a matter of fact, Ari was one of the major investors in Uber, right, when it started. And so it's about creating this synthesis of data and technology. That's where it's all kind of heading. And Ari Emanuel is a part of all that. So losing that piece for Chicago is not insignificant. There are a lot of things that are wrong with this city that the mayor was not able to successfully address. There is no question about that. Crime is something no mayor has been able to successfully address in any really definitive long-term solution. There have been better years than others. There have been better decades than others. But we're certainly, actually, statistically, in one of our better periods of time, believe it or not. But the thing is that it's still, in this day and age, where street crime and shootings and all those things are down nationally over and over and over again, that with the exception of what they referred to as spectaculars, you know, we have, you know, mass shootings and things like that. I hate to use that term. It makes it sound good, but it's not. But the point is that that's a term of art for them, for law enforcement, that this is a pretty good era in security and in safety in the United States and even in Chicago's history. But the problem is that there is so much stuff that goes on and nobody seems to be able to get a handle on it. And I don't care how many politicians are going to get up there and tell you they got a solution. Nobody
does.
That's
right. That's right. And I think it is in the heart of the mayor to try to solve those problems. They're not easily solvable. I think that the thing that harms him the most is the trial of Jason Van Dyke will refresh everyone's memories about the way that was handled at the time, with the messaging from City Hall and the police department and the cover-up of the video and the perceptions of then will come to the surface.
All right. Ben Bradley joins us from the WGN-TV newsroom right now.
Good afternoon. Nice slow news day for you.
Yeah, nothing going on here. Nothing to see here. Move along, people.
You had
Move
one of along. My favorite tweets of the day, Ben, because you talked about the Labor Day situation. I was like, whoa.
Doesn't that blow your mind?
Remind us. Tell us what you...
Rahm Emanuel today announcing that he's not running for re-election the Tuesday after Labor Day. 8 years ago, Mayor Daley chose that same day, the Tuesday after Labor Day, to make an equally stunning announcement in that exact same room behind that exact same podium.
There is a method to that, though.
Right. You've got the election timeline and the
filing clock. The filing clock started, what, on Thursday, right?
August 28th, I believe. Yeah.
So whatever that was, the Wednesday or Thursday of last week. And so they have a certain amount of time to do it. So this would be, so we could do it either going into Labor Day weekend or coming out.
I was finding beautiful symbolism amidst the chaos of today's news.
All right.
You showed a great picture, too, of them standing at the same podium side by side with their families around them.
Thank you, Anna. I appreciate it.
That's beautiful. Speaking of chaos, we have chaos now, as the old Mayor Daley used to say. We have to figure out now. Okay. Let me just run a couple names that have already been floated to me. My phone started to explode at a level unlike ever seen. What does the president like to say? Unlike any time in American history.
Bigly.
Yes.
So are people wanting you to run, or are they just wanting you to float their names?
Yeah, no. Float their names. So, but people coming to me and going, what do you think about this? You know who should be running. It should be this. So I've heard everything from, are you ready?
Yep.
Okay, let's hear it.
We're going to run these down now.
Okay.
In terms of viability.
Got it.
I'm going to go from big to small here.
Okay.
Barack Obama was the first name that got run.
Never
happened.
A residency issue. Do we know where Michelle stored his wedding dress? Was it actually in the Kenwood home?
That's true.
They still own the home.
Yeah.
Okay.
He just doesn't spend a lot of time here. Although he's building an apartment above that museum that they're going to do.
Yes.
So you got that going.
Okay. Next candidate. Okay.
Valerie Jarrett.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
I think we might be onto something there.
Possibility. Okay. Can I throw one in there that's up there?
Yep.
Lisa Madigan.
Yeah, we reached out to Lisa Madigan today, and her people have not responded. They said they won't be doing any interviews, issuing any statements today.
Ooh.
I find it, she could do it because she's got the political infrastructure, she's got the means, she's got the savvy, she's got the name recognition, and she's not running for attorney general. But I think she still gets into that same issue that she would if she ran for governor, and that is you got Mike Madigan in power in Springfield.
Yeah, I'm just taking it out right now. We don't have enough time to go through all of these.
Move it along.
Brendan Riley.
Or as Mayor Daley liked to call him, Brendan O'Reilly.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he gets the Irish vote and the
Irish
vote.
Yeah, yes. I could see that. Yes. I could totally see that.
Although I think the people who drive the horse cabs downtown are not going to support him.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, but, those are Hackney drivers. I think.
Yes.
I think. Hold on a second. No, I would say. I'm trying. Somehow, I'm trying to give him a bell.
And was that like, a maybe, or is that a sort of?
Of course, I am.
I work for it.
Imagine Roe at the board like John King on election day.
I say there is a possibility. I would say there is a possibility. You know another name that's been floated?
Who?
Okay. John Fritchie.
Ooh.
He does have free time and a Twitter account.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
I have former county commissioner.
I have another one. Gary Chico.
Oh, I think that's definitely a possibility.
Although then you'd have two Garys with a G in the race.
Yeah, weird. Yeah.
One would have to get out.
One's G-E-R-Y and then one's G-A-R-R-Y. Neither of them spell their name correctly. That's another problem.
My favorite moment during our midday news coverage of this, and we were less than an hour from Rahm, dropping this bombshell. We were interviewing Alderman Ricardo Munoz live on the air, and when he essentially announced live on WGN that... Well, I'm just considering getting in the race, but I'll let you know by the end of the day.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to. If I were him, I wouldn't.
Well.
What about, now here's another one, though.
Yeah.
And I think this is a big one. Mm-hmm. I think of the ones that we have discussed, I would say that Valerie Jarrett, the other one, Luis Gutierrez.
Ooh.
Luis Gutierrez certainly has the chops to do it. Also, we don't have a big name Hispanic candidate in this race. He would fill that role.
And we don't have any governor. We don't have anybody with government experience to speak of, unless you count Dorothy Brown. And she's going to have government experience, is my guess, from both sides.
Yeah. You know, the other interesting name I heard floated today was Arne Duncan, the former school CEO who's been working on some anti-violence initiatives.
Arne Duncan's already in this race. He's called Paul Vallis. It's like, isn't it the same, essentially?
Former head of the
school. Well, Arne has better
profile.
Hair.
Yeah, but I mean I don't think you're going to see copycat types. You're not going to see people that are going to be fishing off the same pier for money or for votes.
Arne would have the backing though of both Rahm and Obama.
Well, and that to me is the most fascinating behind-the-scenes play that we haven't yet seen the dynamics of. But you have to believe, just like Daley didn't leave without anointing Rahm as his successor. I find it hard to believe that Rahm Emanuel. Mm-hmm. would leave without, having somebody pick to put not only his stamp on, but also to continue his influence.
Depends on why he left.
That's true.
I think we do not understand what has happened here. I think it is fair to say that there hasn't been any reporting of fact that right. I buy into at this moment. I don't think we know the answer.
Well, and even your talk earlier, Ro, that there might be certainly personal considerations. There was one, he just dropped his youngest off at Princeton, and he's an empty nester now. And
I remember he did the empty nester story.
He did it. Remember,
he did,
we were all making
like
fun
week
of
ago?
It.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of a puff piece.
Well, you know what it was? Maybe it was a little bit of a, hey, an empty nester. We're thinking about moving to Nashville like everybody else is. I mean,
Can you imagine
Texas
him without a job sitting around the house? Now, Amy, number one, I'm going to need you.
Oh, God. If I'm her, I'm like, oh, no, you got to get a job. You got to get a job.
Well, maybe he'll just do like Cutler and become like, kind of wear his laid back outfits and lounge around the house a little bit. Deserves it.
Anybody else that we can think of at the
Rod Blagojevich coming. When does he get out of prison? Do we know?
There's your winner right there. All right.
I hope he's out in time.
All right. Paul Vallis is going to join us on the other side right now. We're going to talk to those who are currently in the race. Hey, if you want to run, call us.
Yes.
We are now 981-7200. We'll vet you here and decide whether or not you're up to snuff.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
I've already received one complete. Are you? I called a couple people like, hey, are you going to? And I've received two complete. Are you kidding me?
Why would I do that?
Yeah.
Tough job for sure.
There you go. Yeah. All right, so we'll find out about that.
Row for mayor.
I'm not shy. And together, we've never shied from a challenge. Today, the time has come to make another tough choice. As much as I love this job and will always love this city and its residents, I've decided not to seek re-election. This has been the job of a lifetime, but it is not a job for a lifetime.
All right. I guess not, because he quit.
He's done.
What is
it?
Now he's still mayor. He's still going to be mayor until April of next year when we swear in a new mayor.
That's right.
But we swear at a new mayor starting the day after we swear in a new mayor. So that's how
that
goes.
Kind of how it does go in Chicago. You're absolutely right.
Paul Vallis wants to be the guy we swear at starting in April of next year.
You've been swearing at me for years.
Yeah. So what? All right. Let's talk about this. Were you shocked?
No, not really, because I know people who know people who know him. And, you know, more than a handful have been saying really over the last, actually, couple months that he might not stay in. Although I thought he was going to wait probably until maybe a little longer until November before making a final decision. So I was surprised that he announced it as early as he did. But I've been hearing rumors from, you know, I think legitimate insiders, so to speak, who said, hey, don't be surprised if he doesn't run.
What would you chalk it up to in terms of the largest issue weighing on him? What is it, the Laquan McDonald issue? Was it poll numbers? Was it personal? Where would you place it?
I think it's a combination. You know, it's for the mayor to explain why he elected not to run. But clearly the city wants a change, and certainly the polls reflected that. And, you know, no one's ever accused him of being politically naive. So at the end of the day, I mean, the poll numbers were pretty. I mean, even these so-called Michael Sachs poll, I think he was in the 30s. And so at the end of the day, you know, he probably, you know, the writing was on the wall. But there may have been other reasons.
But 30s gets you. But 30s gets you to the runoff, and all you have to do. I mean, I think you would agree with this. I'm assuming, Paul, that really the most important thing right now is to be in the top two. Right, I mean, winning this thing outright is kind of unlikely in a gigantic field. Mm-hmm. We'll see how the field winnows down.
I plan on winning it outright.
You know? Okay,
and let's say I'm hoping that I win it outright.
Yeah, I know everybody is, but right. I mean, just, right. You know, in a real way. So the reality is that he had the most amount of money by a lot.
Clearly,
right?
Yes,
I mean, at $10 million, and everybody's saying it's about probably a million and a half dollar race that people are trying to raise. Here, just to be competitive in it. So he was well ahead of that. A big question is, where does that money go? Does he give it back? Does he move it to other candidates? Do you have a suspicion? Because all of a sudden now names like Valerie Jarrett are being floated. Luis Gutierrez is being floated.
So many names. It's unlikely.
My attitude is, if you didn't have the guts to challenge him while he was in office, then what makes you think any of these candidates are going to have the guts to make the tough decisions that need to be made to move the city forward? So at the end of the, you know, for me, you know, I'm not even speculating who's going to be in and who's not going to be in. I always felt, not based on my own intuition, but from what people had told me, that he very well might not run. But, you know, I wasn't running this campaign, this campaign wasn't about him. This campaign was about offering fresh and realistic solutions for the future of the city. And what I've always felt that my path to victory was to remind people of my record, just not here but elsewhere, because I think it's been a record of accomplishment. And the city needs someone in the mayor's office who not only can run the city but also has a real compassion for the community. I mean, all the communities. I mean, 78 schools that I built over the years, 80% of them were in the poorest communities in the city. And also, I always felt that this election would be won by the candidate who could best articulate the problem-solving solutions for dealing with this issue of rising crime, the lack of quality.
Okay, well, all right. And let's talk about it. Let's get to specifics here, because the one thing that drives me most crazy, Paul, is like anybody who listens to radio or watches television and they hear politicians just kind of give you a big cherry pick and wide look at this. Mm-hmm. In reality here, you had this just this weekend alone. You had an 11-year-old shot on the south side in the stomach.
Right.
You had a 17-year-old shot. You had three people shot within a few minutes of each other down in the Wild 100s. You had this grad student at Northwestern shot and killed going to an L station on Howard Street and Clark Street.
Yeah.
You've got, I mean, what are we going to do about this?
All right, so let me respond to that. And if I can have more than a minute to do that.
Sure.
I in April articulated what needed to be done to strengthen the police department and to provide an infusion of resources right now so that the police have not only the manpower but also the experienced manpower. And I'm referring to manpower in the biblical sense. So so that it has the resources to be effective. You know, they gutted the Texas division down to from 1,200 to 700. Now they're getting back to 1,200, but most of those new detectives are inexperienced. You know, they still haven't filled those police vacancies because the attrition rate is almost as great as the recruitment of new police officers. So what I said very specifically, and I'll point out that in the plan I articulated, I talked about how to build the police strengths and how to improve training and how to create a pipeline for new police officers that can come from the community. I laid all that out. And sometimes if I'm accused of anything, it's about offering too much detail. But I said specifically what the police department could do is they could tap in to the 6,000 retirees that are out there, and they could do what New York did, what London did, what Denver did, what Dallas did. They could bring experienced officers who know the neighborhoods, who know the communities, back into the ranks, particularly working in the detectives division. Because when you're only clearing 5% of the shootings, and you're only clearing 17% of the murders and 9% of the carjackings, well, you know what? In many cases, you've got the same criminals, repeating crimes. So at the end of the day, that was they're probably going to spend $100 million more in overtime, than they originally budgeted for, simply because they're moving police officers around.
All right, so.
So that was one. That was one.
So you want more police officers. So what are we talking about, 1,000 more?
Well, look, I've called for the hiring of 14,200 police officers. Let me point out, though.
And that would be about 1,000 more, maybe 1,200 more, something like that?
Yeah. Although they're far short of even that because they haven't filled even the vacancies that are in the current budget.
And but you have furlough issues and all that. I mean, we're talking about, so how much do you think you have to raise? If you were to become Mayor Paul Vallas, how much more money do you have to spend on the police budget for personnel, for vehicles, right? Because that's a constant struggle.
So let me respond. Right now, the mayor has in his budget 13,600 police officers. Of course, he hasn't filled all those vacancies. And I've said we need 14,200. And I basically said, you know, let me answer the question by basically saying that when I was city budget director, we had almost 14,000 officers on the street back in the 90s. We never paid more than $38 million in overtime. And in current dollars, inflation adjusted, that's $58 million. Well, they've been spending $150, $160, $170 million in overtime. The overtime savings alone will come close to providing the additional funding that would be needed to fill those additional positions. So at the end of the day, I mean, how much overtime are they paying to keep an additional 1,500 officers on the street through the holidays, or to basically suspend all a leave or vacation and to keep people walking around in uniform?
Very quickly, before we let you go, because we're short on time here. So, other than obviously the crime thing is top of mind for everybody.
Absolutely.
There's a quality of life issue in Chicago, though, too, that is becoming burdensome for people. I was just talking to a guy this morning in the aftermath of all of this who was like, listen, he lives in the city, lives in, you know, like the North Lincoln Park, Lakeview, that area. And his son got a really good job, can't afford to live where near his dad because the taxes are too high. The property taxes, when you combine that with the price of that housing stock, it makes it impossible for families. And these are people of means. So how are we able to attract a middle class tax base when this city is expensive and the services are not as great as they are in other places?
Yeah, how much time do I have?
Give me your emotional reaction.
All right, so let me just say that. Look. We are rapidly becoming an unaffordable city. And let me tell you that many of the big economic development initiatives, many of those, Lincoln Yards, where they're going to build 30, 40, 50, 70-story high rises, you know, like condominiums and apartment buildings. I mean, just imagine the gentrification impact that's going to have on a community. Because as you pointed out, you know,
you're not gentrifying there. There was a steel mill there. There's no gentrification there. That's not gentrifying.
Yeah, well, what's going to happen is as you overdevelop certain areas, it's going to further drive the property values higher. So what you have in many communities is you have rising property taxes. And, you know, when you go out there and you overdevelop certain areas, it drives up the cost. So even even, you know, middle and even upper income families are impacted by the fact that it's getting more expensive to live and your property taxes are
soaring. Well, you definitely want people, listen, you want housing stock. You want it, and a development like that is a genius development because it's replacing a steel mill in an already overpriced
area. I'm not saying that it isn't, but basically saying that you're going to create a $1 billion TIF, okay? And you know, when you create a TIF, particularly in an area that is already experiencing growth in property taxes, all you're doing is shifting the tax burden to individuals who are not in the TIF. And then secondly, you know, the issue even within the community is how big are these towers going to be? What's going to be the impact on infrastructure? I'm not saying that you don't develop the areas. I was speaking to your point, the point that you were making about the – you cited the example of that one individual, certainly an individual earning a decent income, also being affected by the cost of living in his communities.
Right.
I mean, you go to the wards on the north side, and people are complaining about their dramatic increases in assessed valuation. They're worried that they could be taxed out of their homes.
Correct. No
question. So, you know, so one of the things that I have said very quickly,
yes,
is to say, you know, not only have I laid out some ideas on how you can loosen the market so that you can create more affordable housing, so that you can have more supply than demand, which will drive costs down. But I also talked about the need to really cap individual property tax increases so that no one is experiencing 10, 15, 20% increases in their property taxes, so that the increases are more manageable so people can make adjustments. And in my affordable housing and what I call affordable living plan, which I've begun to articulate, you're going to see how I intend on doing that and what the financial implications would be.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Paul.
Paul Vallis.
All right. Thank you.
He wants to be the guy that we get mad at in April.
Swear at, I think you said,
swear
in
at.
Fact.
Exactly. Thank you, Paul.
Right, that does
happen. We swear
in,
we swear at. Thank you, Paul.
I do think the tone changes, though, of the mayoral race, because you did see all the front runners like Vallis, Lightfoot, McCarthy running against Rahm. Their messaging was primarily bashing Rahm.
Right.
A lot of it was. And now it's more about articulating a message that breaks through the noise in a very crowded field.
Not Willie Wilson, Huffer. Though. Willie Wilson was mad at Ron. Ron Manuel, who I didn't have, when he was talking about it, I didn't know who he meant.
But then we figured it out.
Politicians always say they're going to leave public office to spend more time with their family. My children were smart enough to see that coming, and they scattered to the two coasts. So as of the other day, we are empty nesters. Amy and I are still young, and Amy still looks it. We look forward to writing the next chapter in our journey together.
Mayor getting very emotional there.
He does.
Not his kids.
He's a cry at the drop of a hat guy. I get it, because I'm kind of like that, too.
He's a tough guy, but then when it has to do with your kids, your family, you just crawl into a fetal position sometimes, as he described himself as doing after his kids went off to college. He just cried.
He has an ability to describe a situation of pain and humiliation that he will inflict upon you in the most artful way. But that yet, when, you know, if anything happens to him personally or his family, it's like, oh, I'm so sorry. So, we'll just see. It's an interesting deal. By the way, stay close. I got a pair of 3-day general admission tickets to Riot Fest, Chicago and Douglas Park on September 14th through the 16th, featuring punk, rock and roll, metal, indie rock, and roots music. Hear iconic albums from Bad Religion, Cypress Hill, Digital Planets. Diggable. Did I just say what diggable? Digital. I was going to say digital. Diggable Planets. That was a total GN move right there. That's the kind of thing that for years and years and years would happen on this radio station.
Diggable.
Diggable Planets. And more performed front to back. Get your tickets at riotfest.org. Okay.
All right.
Got all that going.
Yeah.
Got all that going.
A lot coming up.
Yeah. All right. Like I said before, we swear him in April and we swear at him in May.
Mm-hmm.
This is another guy who wants to be the mayor of Chicago. He wanted to be it before Rahm Emanuel dropped out, and now Rahm Emanuel's dropped out. And what does it mean for Gary McCarthy? What does it mean for Gary McCarthy?
Well, you know what it means, guys. First of all, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
What it means is people will no longer be afraid to be supporting me behind the scenes. They'll be coming forward and putting their support public, because the mayor had so many people terrorized because of his reputation for treachery. And people were afraid of that. So it's going to make it a lot easier for this democratic process to move forward in the fashion that it was designed to do.
It's already a crowded field, Gary, and you wonder, now you keep hearing so many names floating of people who now feel as if they will enter the race too, because the mayor is out, the incumbent. What does that do to the race? I mean, having so many people to try to get your message out to the people.
Yeah, it makes it difficult, but, you know, I really have to question the fortitude of anybody who was waiting for Rahm Emanuel to drop out to decide that they're going to come in. Either you're interested in trying to save Chicago or you're not. It's not whether or not you can beat Rahm Emanuel or you could beat anybody else in the field. So I really got to question, you know, like I said, the fortitude of those individuals if somebody else does decide now to step up.
Yeah, well, yeah, I understand why you're saying that. It's a smart political thing to say, but the reality is that there are people who just didn't want to that realized that they were fishing off the same pier. They needed the alliances moving forward, and now a guy like, you know, we've heard everything from Barack Obama down as a rumor today, but I mean, I think that there's some legitimate, you know, whether it's Luis Gutierrez or even Valerie Jarrett that get into it, they're going to be very, very well funded. Does this, in terms of, let's just talk about money for just a short answer here. Does this help you in fundraising, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. For the same reason that I said that people are will not be afraid now to support us.
Okay. So, everybody
was watching every single donor and you know, the mayor's people are going through them with a fine-tooth comb and embarrassing people. I mean, this isn't okay. It's not about the people who are supporting us. It's about the candidates and the policies. And by the way, Ro, I didn't say what I said before to be politically correct. I absolutely mean it. If you have an interest in saving Chicago, then you should have stepped up already. And I'm not being politically correct.
No, I'm not saying you're being politically correct. It's just a politically, every candidate is saying, every candidate's already in it is saying the exact same thing. But in the next couple of weeks, you're going to get there's going to be new blood. I think some people are going to drop out now, and then some new people are going to be coming in. So it's going to, you know, sort of how one prepares for that eventuality. All right, let's talk about the city then. Obviously, another tough weekend. Running against what Rahm Emanuel has done, I guess people can still do. You know, we have to change the way that the city is run. But now it's really kind of this, you know, this is a wide open race. And this is more about your vision and less about what's wrong with the current situation. So what is your vision for this summer, which has been a tragedy and a little bit of triumph, but a lot of tragedy? Where do we had Paul Vallis on? He won 14,200 police officers. What do you think there should be?
Well, I think there should be a workload analysis, not just throwing out a number, because that's what people want to hear. Look, you know when the last workload analysis was done in the Chicago Police Department? It was done right after I got here because we did it, and we came up with what we thought were the right numbers. And by the way, let's not forget how those numbers went. You know, we had 50-year lows in the murder rate. It's not as important how many people you have. It's more important what they're doing. And right now, since they don't have the support, the officers are not doing the things that they were doing before. And it's pretty obvious. So my vision for the city
is... Can I stop you on that for 1 second? Because that's an important point. The officers are not doing what they were doing before. What... Define that for me.
Well, getting out of the cars. How's that? Because anytime you get out of the car, you're putting yourself in jeopardy. This is what officers are telling me. So getting out of the car and doing proactive police work has become a thing of the past in the city of Chicago. And the saying is, and I quote, nobody wants to be the next headline.
Right.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be the next headline. But now I'm going to go back and answer your question, Ro. You asked, what is my vision? Business management of City Hall. Not the politics as usual, not the patronage, not the pay for play and the corruption, which, by the way, speaking of which, somebody needs to ask the mayor if he's going to give all that money back now. Just think about that. He's collected, what, $10 million?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to walk away with that? That's criminal.
Well, that's a question. We'll see what happens there.
He runs for their office or what he chooses to do.
Or he gives it back. You can give it back.
We just heard Paul Vallis also talk about the need for experienced detectives, saying that with the retirement rates, that there's so few of them on the job right now that actually have any real experience. And you've got this 17% clearance rate on the murders in the city, an even lower rate of clearance for shootings. And you've literally got people getting away with this kind of activity for a number of reasons. But is the low number of detectives, is that something else, or the experienced detectives, something else that you would advise?
Well, like I said, Anna, we need to do a workload analysis to make those determinations. Just simply throwing out numbers and things like that isn't going to do it. What is the right number based on analysis? If somebody has an analysis to this, then please let me know.
Okay, because so how do we do that? How do we get the analysis?
You conduct it. You look at a workload analysis. Every business in the world does it.
Do you do it externally or you do it internally?
You mean, do you hire somebody to come in and do it?
Or do they do it internally?
We could do that. You could do it internally. You could do it that way. That's fine. But here's the point that nobody seems to get. If you want to talk about clearance rates, we need to talk about the fact that two consecutive chiefs of detectives, 65 years of experience, were pushed out the door in the political witch hunt. So it may not even be the fact that we need more detectives. It might be that we need different leadership and more experienced leadership.
And you would invite some of those guys back, you think? Is that a good plan? Because that's one of the things Vallis
said. I don't think they can come back once they... Oh, you're talking about the actual investigators.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. Ro, I'm not going to answer questions that I don't know the answer to, and the answers have to come after you do analysis. Not just because you say it's politically expedient to say that we're going to hire more detectives, we're going to hire this. So everybody loves the number, I'm going to hire 1,000 more police.
Right.
What if we only need 500? And what if we actually need 1,500?
So I want to go back to
say this is what we're going to do.
You're uniquely qualified to answer this question. So every other politician is running in this race right now can't really answer this. So what do you say to the men and women of the Chicago Police Department who are afraid to get out of their cars right now? And this has been going on, you know, for even prior to the shooting of Laquan McDonald. But I mean, this obviously highlights it it highlights the difficult work that police officers have to do and the crazy split second kind of decisions that they have to make that could be life altering. How do you get the men and women? And we'd have a police, you know, former police superintendent, mayor. How would you win their trust back that they know that they're going to be able to go out and do their jobs as long as they're doing it legally and with enough compassion that allows them to, you know, to continue to do it?
Well, you do it by starting with backing them up publicly when they do something right and showing publicly that you're not going to support any sort of criminal activity. Do you realize that when CPD marched onto the Dan Ryan Expressway, they were committing a crime? and that's not okay. Police in uniform should have been subject to arrest for violating the law. They're subject to arrest when they violate the law in other cases. So you got to realize just such a bad place that we're in. And when the officers see that that's what the leadership of this department is doing, that's what the leadership of this city is condoning, you realize on Lakeshore Drive, the city closed down Lakeshore Drive to facilitate the illegal activity of occupying Lakeshore Drive. We've reached lawlessness. So we have to first identify the problem. The problem is the politics that have been fueling that. So you got to come out and say, you got to call balls and strikes. If they're right, you say they're right. If they're wrong, you say they're wrong. But how about the fact that we have a video of a guy pulling a gun from a holster that he's wearing? We have body cam showing this, and yet we have protests for days after showing that video.
Right.
And then they release the video but won't comment on it. I'm the only candidate, not even the police superintendent, not the mayor, came out and said, well, look, you got a guy grabbing a gun from a holster that we already saw. You want the officer to wait to get shot? I'm the only candidate who said, at first blush, unless I find something else out during the investigation, that looks like a justified shooting.
Yeah.
It starts there.
Let me, it starts there. Let me throw a totally different thing in the last minute that we have here, last couple of minutes. In terms of property taxes in Chicago, we were just talking about this as well. Yeah. Chicago's become a very difficult city to live in unless you have a lot of money. Right in downtown and in neighborhoods that either people want to move into if they're coming out of grad school or whatever it is. What is your plan for property tax alleviation or some form of creating an environment here in which there is affordable housing for the middle class?
Well, it starts by not putting 31% of our property taxes towards TIF funding, which results in political kickbacks for the mayor. I don't know if anybody realizes this. The TIF funding took up 31% of our property taxes this year. And what is happening with that? It's supposed to be used by state law for blighted neighborhoods for generating an economy. And what's happening is it's being used in places like Block 37 or Navy Pier. And then what happens is these developers now make campaign donations to the mayor. So it starts by making sure that we're doing needs-based spending, not political spending. He was going to announce a $10 million refurbishing of the Riverwalk on the Monday after 74 people got shot in the city. I mean, come on, just look at what's been going on. He would do that because he was in with the lakefront crowd and the 1% that's been supporting him the whole time. So that's political spending. We got to get in the black before we can start paying the pensions back. And the way to do it is to stop wasting money on a $62 million flyover bike path for downtown. And we need to start putting social services in the places where they're needed the most to stop people from getting killed. Nothing's going to change in this city until we first make it safe. People are leaving the city. We have to stop the exodus because with it goes our tax base all at the same time. And they're leaving the city because of gun violence and high taxes.
Rats. Also rats. I hear that a lot, too.
We're number one.
I guess that's the big issue, because I know people know your record on crime and certainly familiar with the changes that you have proposed for the department, but it's on the other issues, the budget issues that are facing this city, where I think you are more of a question mark to people. People need to hear more of your ideas, because we are in a crisis. We do have a situation here where people keep leaving the city, and we have this pension problem that doesn't go away, and you still want to offer services, more police officers and et cetera, education, mental health, and those kinds of things that people are desperately calling for in the city. How do you balance all of that?
Well, they're all interrelated, first of all. People are leaving the city because of gun violence and high taxes. And because we don't have a tax base, we all have to pay more taxes. And as a result of not having that tax base, we're closing schools and pulling social services from the places that need them the most. So you can't separate those issues out. And the other thing, Anna, that people need to realize is that it's not that I'm just a police officer. I'm a manager. I've managed large, diverse organizations for a very, very, very long time. And I was at the top of city government in three major cities in this country. So I know how to manage budgets. I know how to manage finances. I know how to manage an education system, because we were taught business management. And you get the right people, you put them in the seats, you give them the authority, and you hold them accountable for making these things happen. Performance-based government, not the thing that we're accustomed to here, which is politics. Politics, politics, and more politics, and it's failing. It's what's got us to this position. Nothing in this city is being managed. There's zero customer service in City Hall. You probably get treated better in places like Cook County Jail than if you go up to try and get a permit for building something in City Hall.
All right.
So you got to run the city like a business, and it just hasn't been done.
All right, Gary McCarthy. Well, interesting day.
It's a pleasure, guys.
Thanks, interesting Gary. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, Willie Wilson's going to join us coming up after Judy's News.
Is he giving away more money?
We'll find out. Maybe he's going to double down now because he has an opportunity. Just think about that. I don't know what this music is about to tell you this right now.
got a pair of three-day general admission tickets to Riot Fest, Chicago's Douglas Park, on September 14th through 16th, featuring punk, rock and roll, metal, indie, and roots music. I don't even know what that means either. Bad Religion, Cypress Hill, Diggable Planets, and more perform front to back with their albums. Get your tickets at radfest.org.
I understood most of that.
Thank you.
The way to really not sell it. I know.
He didn't really
Who knows
understand
who these
it.
People are, yeah. But you totally want to go see them. Actually, if Cheesy DJ Cypress guy doesn't Hill. Recognize them, then I would actually like them better, I think.
Well, I mean, Cypress Hill, aren't we just going to get stoned? Isn't that what we're going to do? Isn't that what Cypress Hill is all about?
I've heard.
Yeah.
I've heard that that's what that's about. He sounds a little sick today.
Yeah. It was a long weekend.
Yeah, it was a long weekend.
Oh. What day is it?
You know, it's amazing. So, spending a little time on a college campus this weekend.
Enlightening.
Two college campuses, actually.
Right, you went to Denison and Ohio State.
I went to Denison and Ohio State, right. And, you know, I've noticed. I've noticed a lot of pop-up cannabinoid product places.
The medical sorts? Or?
Yeah, it's kind of the stuff that you don't necessarily need a license. You know, and it's like an oil,
yeah,
or a salve, or a talcum powder, or something. I don't know what the hell it is. Where they go, this is what you need. You put two drops under your tongue, totally legal, and you had no pain. I still haven't figured out exactly what's going on there
with the cannabinoid.
Yeah,
right. I know people are using them that are not necessarily the drug crowd, and some say they like them.
I know. All of a sudden, right. The only problem is, I would like to explain to the kids in college, their grandparents are doing this at home.
They're both doing it together.
Right.
They can do this together.
That's right. And the parents are like, Dad! Son!
Yeah. Don't put that in the medicine cabinet unlocked.
I know. It's some crazy stuff. So that's kind of what we're up against here. That's what we're running into.
Yeah, it is funny because out of nowhere, suddenly, that's everywhere. In the college campus area, I would imagine. Is it sold at the same stores with the pipes and the elaborate
bombs? No, it's a separate standalone kind of a thing.
Oh.
You know, where you go in and it's and they're selling you junior mints, which are not laced, and then whatever else there happens to be. I don't know quite what
educational.
To make of it. Yeah, I don't know.
I need some more money in my fund.
It's exactly what's going on.
Did you see the candies and the chocolates and stuff infused with the cannabinoids?
No, that's a separate thing. I don't think they have that in Ohio yet. But we're getting it here. Don't you worry about it. All right. All day today, we've been reacting to the fact that Rahm Emanuel has decided that he is no longer going to seek the office of mayor of the city of Chicago. If you're just turning on your radio for the first time today, you didn't see this pop up on your phone. That is what has happened. And now Willie Wilson. We talked earlier to Paul Vallis and to Gary McCarthy, and now Willie Wilson joins us. And he has been in the race now for the last number of months. And even though, I mean, you guys are all technically in the race, but not yet on the ballot, because that the whole process starts now, right? Where you have to get your petitions together, and then they do that officially started last week. But the your reaction, first of all, were you surprised that Rahm Emanuel dropped out?
Well, no, I predicted this 4 or 5 months ago. You know, I said it could save some embarrassment. Yeah.
And what do you think that's all it was about?
Well, I know he couldn't win. You know, he'd not been a good mayor of the city of Chicago for the citizen. So my poll always showed that, you know, and I've done 2 polls and 3 pretty much. So we always showed that, and just not a good for Chicago. That's why I'm running. Otherwise, no, I'd stay in retirement.
So change the way that you look at how you're going to message here, because you're not really running against Rahm Emanuel anymore. You're running, you know, for Willie Wilson. It's about like what Willie Wilson's vision is for the city.
Well, we ran for the city of Chicago, came out of retirement to take to do this. We're running to get these schools back open. We're running to keep these taxes down. Running to get rid of these red light cameras. You know, we're running to make sure we can have a fiscal budget. We're running to make sure that the teacher, the police department, fire department, to get that pension, things of that nature. We're running to balance the budget. And by the way, the last 4 days, I got over 20,000 signatures already.
Yeah. So you have what you need.
Yeah, but we'll go to probably get 50,000 or 70,000, maybe 200,000 or 300,000.
Because you always have to get ahead because
it can challenge your address and your voter. Yeah,
right. Well, you don't forget, last time in 4 days, I got 70,000. Oh. 4 days.
So let's talk about the Jason Van Dyke trial that is going to be starting tomorrow in terms of jury selection, and that's obviously going to cast a very large shadow on this race and people's reaction to whatever is going to happen here. And it appears that this election is probably going to be somewhere the trial is going to be somewhere 3-4 weeks maybe. So by October we should have a verdict here. What do you feel as a Chicagoan, as a citizen, if Jason Van Dyke is not found guilty of murder in this case, but maybe of a lesser charge or not at all, anyway, he's acquitted, are you concerned about the city?
I'm concerned. I would be the first one to go out and say, hey, keep calm. You know, we don't need violent. You know, we don't need that. There's no place for it. I've been talking to people already about it, matter of fact, because the rumor's out there that he's going to walk, you know. But I just hope that doesn't happen.
Seem likely he's going to get a first-degree murder conviction because he is a police officer called to a scene.
If I shot one of you all 16 times, what would that be?
Well, that would be you, but you as an individual, but you're not a police officer, right?
No police officer. How many times you can kill a guy? A person. 16 right. time now.
Right.
The video is pretty compelling to a lot of people.
And we'll let the courts decide that. But the real, you know, the aftermath of that is if he is convicted of murder, I mean, you become mayor. How do you win the support and the trust of the police department that you would be the mayor of?
Well, look. Everybody in the police department knows, look, a lot of people know what's right and what's wrong.
Right.
Okay? I think a lot of these things goes away. I think it was the leadership of the mayor of the city of Chicago that have gotten this thing out of proportion. You know, mine being a new mayor, I'm claiming it now. I've already told y'all about this if stuff. You know? All right? So, look, we're going to straighten it out. We're going to be fair with everybody. Look, this present mayor now, of course, got the guy's pension money all out of the way. I would never do nothing like that. You know?
Mm-hmm. Where are we going to get the money? How do you make Chicago a city that is affordable, dynamic, growing? There are so many cities throughout the Midwest and the West and the South in the United States that are growing dramatically. It's smaller cities, you know, Nashville is the, you know, prime example of a city that has Charlotte, North Carolina, Grand Rapids, Michigan. I mean, you get these cities that two decades ago people would have just, you know, not considered very much, are now growing metropolitan areas. How does Chicago compete? It's a world-class city, world-class business, right? Mm-hmm. Your former business, McDonald's, right, based right here, one of the biggest corporations in the world, United Airlines, you know, you just think about everything Chicago has to offer. But how do you keep people interested in staying here given the crime and the taxes?
Well, first off, I'm against taxes. You tax people and run them out of the city.
But then how do you pay for the party here?
Well, you easy way you do. First of all, you deal with the mismanagement, number one. All right? Next, you bring the businesses in by keeping the tax lower. All right? Then by taxes high, you run them over in Indiana or other places and things of that nature out of the city. So the unemployment rate goes higher. Right? Next, you bring in the revenue to generate it. All right? By bidding out the contracts and things of that nature on job, like the building next door over there, you know, bidding them out, not having friends and showing favoritism to them, right? Those type of things. Then you bring in your casinos, you know, always been for casinos, always been for open mag field back up. And I'm legalized marijuana, tax it, all right? Help go down to budget. I think the budget city.
Legalize marijuana for recreational purposes.
Well, whatever they want to use it for. Yeah. All right?
Yeah.
All right, be real about it.
I think it's recreating, yes. I think that's probably
I mean,
it.
Be real
you already have medical.
It, you know?
Yeah.
And versus medical stuff. But look, it's legal and out in West and everything else. You take those dollars that you add it up, and then you'll begin to see this deficit erased. I'm a business person. I'm the only person, business person. All right, I understand business. When I look, one night I woke up and I was in debt over $72 million.
So you were in debt over $72 million?
Well, I woke up one night, $72
million. How long ago was this?
About 5 or 6 years ago. What happened was I had the factory built down in Tennessee. Oh. China lowered their prices, you know, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And they took
this has nothing to do with McDonald's. This is your own personal business.
My own personal business, right. Mm-hmm. That was a glove manufacturer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. And we came out of that. You know, we had to, look, you can do better managing your own budget and making things balance out. But if you got people taxpayer dollars, mm-hmm. it didn't come out of your own pocket. Mm-hmm. All right. And you try to balance it with that. That's all you got to look forward for. But let you balance your own budget. All right. And then you begin to figure out the whole situation. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. We're hired over my course of business, hundreds of thousands of people. You know, look, so that's not a situation there. I mean, I understand this thing called business.
Yeah.
You know?
You were criticized earlier for giving away money, giving away your money to people, and the election board state official said that it was okay. The election, you did not violate election law. Are you going to continue to do that now? Is that something you'll halt at some point if you start to move forward in this race, or is that going forward? And how much do you think you have given out already, Willie?
I have no idea. You know, I can tell you this. Overall, we give away $300,000-$400,000 a year out of my pocket to people on the street don't have IDs. All right, people out of town. I'm over in Rome. We giving away money in Rome.
And you're giving around the same amount now, would you say?
We still do that now, but I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to use my foundation anymore, but I use my own personal money. Mm-hmm. Because those people on the street don't have food to eat, and I cannot turn that down. You know, I mean, it's a whole different scenario. You know, look, the 8-0 ruled my favor, all right? And I knew this. I think you guys was against me, too.
I wasn't against you.
Roach just had his hand out, if you recall. He was coming up for reasons why he deserved some of that money. Let's start there.
Yeah, all right. But I was saying, look, I'm hoping I'm still friends with you guys. You know, I'm trying to help the people. Look, if one person like myself can give away hundreds of thousands out of his pocket, but out of my foundation and my business, millions of dollars a year. Now you understand, now 1995, the Wall Street Journal was saying the same thing. All right. I understand this too. I give money to people on the street and everything in Rome, all right, in Egypt, all right, all over the United States. Yeah. So that's a matter of who I am.
But that's right. Mm-hmm. That is who you are.
It is.
And now the lanes are opened up for the completely wide open race here for mayor of Chicago and Willie Wilson. I just said it today mm-hmm. on the television. I don't know if you saw it, but I said that you'll be there at the end on this.
The final two?
Yeah, for the final two.
I'm going to win.
I know.
Because you all
everybody
don't support
says that,
me,
yes.
All right?
Yeah, all right. All right, Willie, thank you very much. Appreciate you being here.
Thanks, Willie.
Steve Stone joins us right now. Steve Stone on Baseball brought to you by Let Us Entertain You Restaurants.
Ate at Joe's last night. You got to have the halibut. It was sensational.
For the halibut.
Yeah, I like it.
That's exactly why. We had a night off. We don't get many of those, so it was couldn't stay away. It was delightful.
Yeah,
like Joe's.
Really, 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 really good there.
Special.
Hey, the Sox are on a little bit of fire here. It's very, very fun to watch right now. And I won't again ask you this question about Eloy Jimenez and who's going to come up and who's going to come down. But let's just talk about the being on a team right now is these guys are getting ready to finish the season. Obviously, they're not going to be in the postseason. What do they take away from this season? What are the kids going to take away, do you think?
I think the improvement that they've made as a team from the start of the season until now. I think when we started this year, we realized it was the second year of a rebuild and that things would be a little tough, and they were. The defense was not good. The pitching wasn't particularly good. The offense was spotty. And so as the season went along, you saw the result of a lot of hard work on the part of a lot of different players. Guys are putting together terrific years, and as so often happens, you get a surprise that you didn't even think about. And Daniel Palka's one of those surprises. I mean, you couldn't have known a great deal about him after spring training because he came over from the Twins and there wasn't a whole lot there to report as far as what he was going to do. We have found that he can hit the ball as hard, if not harder, than just about anybody in the major leagues, except perhaps for Stanton. But, you know, he's hit a lot of home runs. He's among the leaders in all of baseball as far as rookies are concerned for this year. So that's one of the real pleasant surprises. The increased ability of Tim Anderson to turn a game around with both his glove and his legs, as well as hitting the ball out of the ballpark, is something that certainly has has gotten a whole lot better as this year has moved along. I mean, Tim started the year, he was a little shaky defensively. The defense has gotten very good. He's consistently good offensively, and I think we've seen his running game is one of the things that helps turn around some of the games. So I think just the improvement of this team from the start of the season to where they're at now, right now they're close to as hot as any team in baseball over the last 20-some games. And so I think it gives everybody a sense of, a sense of going into the off season knowing that this team improved. If it makes that next stride with a lot of different players, it's got a chance to be pretty decent next year.
Yeah, very exciting.
Well, the rotation for next year is looking pretty good. You have four of the five already. We'll see what they do with James Shields. But for me, Steve, that's the biggest bright spot is the development of Giolito and Lopez, who hit some rough patches. But, man, it's been pretty good from all the guys. And, of course, Rodon's been dominant like an ace in Kopech. So that rotation looks pretty good. You got four of your five for next year.
Yeah, you got 80% of the guys that you figure are going to have a real good season next year because of what they did this year. And certainly with Lopez and Giolito, we saw both of those guys really improve drastically from the start of this year. With Kopech, he's only thrown three times. Two of them have been rain delayed, but we certainly have liked what we've seen. And Rodon is throwing the ball as well as anybody in baseball.
Yeah, so, isn't that true?
Yeah, 80% of the starting rotation looks pretty good. And somewhere down the line, and I don't know where it's going to be, but just keep an open mind toward Dylan Cease. He's still very young, but this is a guy that eventually is going to fill one of those spots in rotation. We don't know exactly when it's going to be, but bear that name in the back of your mind because you're going to see him. I don't know exactly when, but he's got magnificent stuff. And as one of the guys to help fill out a rotation, it looks to me like if that is the guy, and again, nobody knows really when it's going to be, but if that is the guy, the rotation looks pretty sound. And what the boys in the front office are going to have to do, they're going to have to make a decision on that bullpen. Do they go out and bring in a couple of established veterans, or do they go with some hard-throwing kids that we've seen and will see throughout the month of September and maybe give them a shot next year and see how they develop?
Yeah.
I think we're seeing Hamilton looking pretty good so far. You know, granted, it's only a couple of performances, but we know he's not afraid of anything, and we also know that he's got good enough stuff at 98 to get some people out.
It's a fun time to be a baseball fan in Chicago, Steve Stone. Thank you very much.
Yes,
Appreciate it.
Thanks, sir.
Okay. Take care, guys. Have a good rest of the show.
Thank you. Coming up, stories that matter with Judy Pilak from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. WGN. Coming up, 3-day admission to Riot Fest in Douglas Park, September 14th through the 16th. You got everything there.
You do.
You got your punk.
Mm-hmm.
You got your rock and roll.
Great.
You got your metal. You got your indie. You got your roots. What are you looking for? What are you looking for?
Covering a lot of bases there.
Iconic albums performed from front to back by Bad Religion, Cypress Hill, Diggable Planets,
mm-hmm.
or as Cheesy DJ calls them, Digible.
Digible.
Get your tickets at riotfest.org.
Coming up September 14th.
I think it was you who said Digible. I like to blame it on you.
Let's blame him.
All right.
For everything.
We got a top 5-5 coming your way. Also, let me tell you about this. A.B. Mm-hmm. Stoddard will be here. Obviously, the bombshell Chicago story is that Rahm Emanuel will not seek a third term as mayor. We've been covering that all day. Talked to all the people who want to be mayor for reasons that still elude me, but they do.
Not all of them. It's such a crowded field. It's hard to get them on the show in one day, but we got through a lot of them.
Yes, but what we will have in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
On the today is we were talking to AB about this. This Bob Woodward book is coming out.
Yeah.
And Washington is on fire because in the Bob Woodward book, basically he is quoting, in some cases, he's actually quoting former staff members. And he is saying that he has sources that say the current staff members of the White House think that the president is, in one case, dangerous to the country.
Right. He's basically quoting Gary Cohn, the senior economic advisor, and Secretary Mattis is observing and saying some pretty disturbing things.
Yes. So we will we'll talk about that. What's the firestorm in Washington as a result of this book? It was the chief of staff who referred to the White House as crazy town. It's crazy town in here.
It's gone off the rails, according to the quote. And this is
now people are pushing back. Though
they are.
The White House has released a couple of statements from John Kelly, the chief of staff.
Secretary Mattis also said never uttered the words that are said in this book. Never even have been in the presence of words that were spoken like this. However, this is Bob Woodward, who is known, unlike Wolf and his Fire and Fury book, or unlike Omarosa and her tell-all, salacious tell-all. He's known for his fact-checking, and he's known to get things pretty right.
He also gives lie to some of the stuff that President Trump has already said about this book by saying, no one ever asked me about it. I didn't know you were going to do this. How, you know, why didn't you call me? And Bob Woodward has released a tape that he has had with the phone conversation he had with the president. He asked the president's permission to tape the phone conversation. So it's not the breaking of any kind of a rule. And he has released that tape. And that's coming up at number one in the top five at five. Wait till you hear that. He said.
I've not heard that yet.
Yes, well, you're about to.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Number five.
Tiffany Van Dyke, the wife of Jason Van Dyke, the police officer who has been charged with murder in the shooting of Laquan McDonald, spoke with Windy City Live yesterday. It was played today. Val Warner performed the emotional interview, and the wife here reveals that her kids are actually suffering from being bullied at school about this whole situation.
Both of my children actually are bullied at school. My oldest came home from school one day. She didn't even come home. She called me halfway through the day, crying. And I said, what is the matter? And she said, somebody wrote 16 shots on her desk. My 12-year-old, innocent 12-year-old, sat in her classroom, and another student called her father a murderer to her face.
Then, this was compelling. She talks about a ride that she took with her husband. They were on the Stevenson, and they went fairly close to where the shooting took place.
We were driving down 55 one day, I-55 coming in toward the city, and we passed Pulaski, where the incident happened. And I was looking out the window at the time, and I look over to him, and he's mouthing. And I'm like, what are you doing? And I realized it in that moment. He was saying a prayer. He says a prayer constantly, every time we pass Pulaski.
Yeah.
I mean, it's clearly a defense strategy to put them out there. I mean, Jason Van Dyke was out there giving interviews, and he got in trouble with that with the judge, and now his wife is out there. It's hard not to feel for her and the kids, but I think her husband needs to face what the consequences for what he did, and the jury will decide that.
Right. Well, however this comes out, there obviously is, there will be a rendered verdict, and you just hope that the city of Chicago, the people of the city of Chicago, respect and represent, you know, the city. Let the system work for itself here.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
And don't try to take the law into your own hands. All right. Checking in at
number four.
All right. Well, you know that Brett Kavanaugh is up on Capitol Hill.
Oh, boy. That didn't start out well today.
Yeah. And now, the question is, what about the future of women's reproductive rights, right? Roe versus Wade. So Senator Tammy Duckworth from Illinois, right here, says it's not just about abortion, holding her young daughter in her lap at a press conference today. She says that there are other issues, like what do you do with fertilized eggs for egg donors.
If Roe v. Wade were overturned, the protections provided by Roe v. Wade against things like personhood amendments, personhood bills, would actually have made would have disappeared, which means that my fertility doctors would have been committing a crime in helping me to try to start a family.
That is, I've wondered about that forever.
Hmm.
Because that does... That's a part of the fertility process, right?
Right, and medicine is moving quickly, is faster and faster all the time and moving forward, and you wonder, how does Roe v. Wade apply to these more modern medicine advancements?
Right, because you fertilize eggs, right, and then store them,
mm-hmm.
and you put some in, you destroy others.
That's right.
What happens to the, sometimes there is once in the womb there has to be it's an awful I'm certain an awful choice for parents, but they put in more fertilized eggs
to
than
see if they'll take
that,
and you don't
some
know.
Of them maybe you have women who have three or four that take
and they don't feel they could take them all to term, so there's a reduction and that decision is made. How does that apply to Roe v. Wade?
Excellent question.
What month can you
do it? Find out what happens with this Kavanaugh guy up on the Capitol Hill.
Did you see the chaos at the beginning of that?
Yeah, there was a lot of yelling and screaming.
And Piper Perabo was arrested, just in case people want to.
Oh, no! Peekaboo Perabo!
She, from Coyote Ugly, she was one of the many, many people for civil disobedience at the Kavanaugh hearings.
All right. So all right.
We feel for her.
Good. That's another thing we'll talk to A.B. Stoddard about coming up. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Mater and Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9.
Sure guy!
Joe Donlin.
Yep.
Have you guys seen him lately?
Nope.
Holiday weekend golf trip or anything?
Through his window, his bathroom window, but that's...
I asked him to go to Columbus, Ohio with me. He said nope.
Oh.
I asked him to golf yesterday.
Oh.
Did he go?
No? Busy?
No response. He did a thing.
Oh, God.
Number three.
Keep trying, guys.
We will. Hey, Aretha Franklin's funeral.
Yeah.
Did not go as planned. Did not go as planned.
People were looking at each other like, is that who she wanted to eulogize her?
Right. For example, you had Jess Williams Jr., the Reverend, the Right Reverend, mm-hmm. Jess Williams Jr., who went a little off script.
He did.
Do Black Lives Matter? Let me answer like this. No, Black lives do not matter. Black lives will not matter. Black lives ought not matter. Black lives should not matter. Black lives must not matter until black people start respecting black lives and stop killing ourselves. Black lives can never matter.
Okay. I appreciate it. I appreciate the the argument. It's actually, I think, an argument. I wouldn't put it that way,
right.
But it certainly points out one of the great ironies of American life right now. No question, and it does need to be addressed. But Aretha Franklin is lying there in a gold casket wearing red high-heeled shoes. And
as
is that really
should.
The time to bring this up? But then it got weirder.
It did.
It got weirder. So Ariana Grande gets introduced by the Bishop Charles H. Ellis III, who, he said this.
When I saw Ariana Grande on the program, I thought that was a new something at Taco Bell. Girl, let me give you all your respect. Did y'all enjoy this icon? She's an icon herself. Come on, make her feel love at Greater Grace Temple, the city of Davis.
Mm. Now, mm-hmm.
Trying to make it better at the end there.
Yeah, there was a little problem because he then reached around and gave her like a hug.
Oh.
But he did that thing.
And didn't let go.
He did that thing where he gave her a hug, not around her shoulder, but like around her body. And
the DJ and the Taylor Swift hug?
No, not the buttocksial region.
No.
He was going for a little side boob. That's what he was going for. That is what he was going for.
But he was holding on for such a long time. That whole time, she's like trying to
look away. Oh, I'm looking at it now. Very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And then she finally
pulling
like,
away physically.
Yeah, and then she's like, okay, fine, I'll give him a hug.
Oh.
And then still holds on.
Yeah.
Oh.
Wouldn't let go. You got yeah. the, you know, the,
not cool.
You
know. Not okay.
Yeah, he's apologized for everything.
Her dress was a little short.
I know, for a funeral. Well, the whole thing, I mean, listen, as soon as the guy started going Black Lives Matter, you know, you're like, okay.
Well, he also
we're
said,
off script here, people.
He's like, wait a minute, pull this one together again. Well, he also said children who grew up in households without fathers are like abortion. It's like an abortion after birth. I mean, he really
there's
did
a lot
not
going
represent
on there.
The family.
Yeah, okay. These are all sociological things that we can, and religious issues we can have a debate about. But meanwhile, the Queen of Soul's lying there.
She shouldn't
time's,
have to
time's
have
kind
that.
Of a wasting.
Number two.
Jeffrey Owens, who played Elvin, the son-in-law of the Huxtables on The Cosby Show.
Yep.
Now works at Trader Joe's. And they took a picture of him there. Somebody took a picture. Somebody figured out that was him. Like, that guy looks just like Elvin. Oh, my God, it is Elvin. They take a picture. And the next thing you know, he starts getting shamed on social media for not having a better job. Well, he doesn't like that.
No.
So he sat down with Robin Roberts at ABC.
I mean, I was really devastated, but it lasted. It was the period of devastation was so short because so shortly after that, the responses, my wife and I started to read these responses from like literally all over the world of support. No one should feel sorry for me, either from a positive or a negative perspective. I've had a great life. I've had a great career, and I've had a career that most actors would really, you know, would die for. So no one has to feel sorry for me. I'm doing fine.
How about that? What a good way to deal with that. Because people just, I mean, got ugly on him. He says he took his job. It's a job, and he took it in between acting gigs, and this is what he wanted to do, and he did a good job at it. But it's amazing what people find. And he was wearing his Yale hat. Did you see that? And his Trader Joe's badge when he gave that interview today.
Yeah.
And it's just...
Guess what, people? Come on. Get a life. If your day is trolling other people on social media...
Over their job. For
or
working.
Anything. If your whole reason for being is to get on social media and say crappy things about people.
It's not right.
You are a despicable human being.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, of course, you're running the free world. Which leads us to...
Number one.
Okay. So we're going to talk about this with A.B. Stoddard coming up. And we'll play more of the tape of this. But I need to play this for you right now. Bob Woodward... You know, Woodward and Bernstein.
Mm-hmm. Watergate Woodward.
Yes. Formerly of the Washington Post, one of the great writers and actually historical writers of the past 50 years is now writing a book about the Trump White House.
Right, Will.
And it's creating all kinds of problems because there's stories in there about people, about Gary Cohen taking stuff off his desk so he won't sign it. About Jim Mattis saying that he's got the intellectual capacity of a sixth grader. There's all kinds of stuff here. And we'll talk to AB about all that. But there was a phone conversation that Bob Woodward had with Donald Trump before the book came out. And Trump's like, well, why didn't you ask me for an interview? And Bob Woodward was like, I did ask you for an interview. I asked a bunch of people to ask you for an interview. Well, what about Kellyanne Conway? Well, and then Trump's like, well, Kellyanne Conway never told me about it. And guess who walks into the room right at that moment?
You know, you and I spent a whole lunch on it, Kellyanne. And I said, I want to cover the substantive issues in foreign policy and domestic policy. And you said you would get back to me. Nothing.
Yeah, so I did. I presented it to the people here who make those decisions, but anyway, I'll give you back to the president, and I'm glad to hear that you tried through 7 or 8 different people.
Yeah.
That's good. You should tell him all the names. Thank you.
But you never called for me. It would have been nice, Bob, if you called.
Well, that's the whole point. Like, can we just call the president? We should just try that. We should try it tomorrow to interview the president just by calling him.
Let's try that tomorrow.
Let's see if we can get him on the phone.
Do we have to go through Kellyanne?
I mean, we're not Bob Woodward, but we're the Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis. We're WGN's big, right?
That should stand for something. Darn it.
He has seven different people, including there's one part where he asks Raj Shah, you know, that guy that you sometimes see when he's filling in for Sarah Sanders?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Trump's like, I don't even know who that guy is. Right? He works for you. He's on TV defending you.
A lot.
Who wants that job? I don't know who he is. I don't care.
I don't speak to him.
All right. We'll play more of that and find out what the fallout in Washington is. This is a big story today in Washington. Not like the big story here in Chicago, which Judy Pilak is going to be bringing to you right now, brought to you by Builder Supply Outlet. Judy, hold on. Let me close this thing up.
The top five at five.
Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here, 720 yes. WGN. A.B. Stoddard joins us, as she is very kind to do on most weeks, to stop by and just, she's got a tumbler of a very, very large, cold, alcoholic drink in her hand, and is like, I can't believe I have to deal with this. And sometimes it's us, and sometimes it's just Washington, and today it's Washington.
Yeah, we'll blame them.
I want to play a piece of tape here. This is Bob Woodward talking to the president. There's a Bob Woodward book coming out. It's not like a tell-all book, but it's a pretty indicting tome about what's going on in the White House. It refers to the White House. He quotes John Kelly, who's referring to the White House as crazy town. And the president's like all mad that Bob Woodward didn't call him to, you know, get an interview with him beforehand. And Bob was like, I did. I called everybody to try to get an interview with you, including.
I mean, I have a secretary. I have 2-3 secretaries. If you would have called directly, a lot of people are afraid that Raj, I hardly have, you know, I don't speak to Raj. I do. And Kellyanne went to somebody, but she didn't come to me.
She
should have come to me.
I don't speak to Raj. How's that going to work when he steps up to the podium next time to express the views of the White House and the president?
How would you like to be Raj Shah today?
I know. It's a bad day.
He's the coffee boy of September 2016. There should be like a centerfold for that.
Yes.
What do you think?
I don't know him.
The coffee boy calendar.
Yeah, the coffee boy calendar.
Well,
and
we could put Papadopoulos on it.
Oh, he's the first one. He's the first coffee boy. He's Papadopoulos.
He could be the cover boy.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. What do you mean?
What is happening?
This is significant, right? What's going on in Washington today as a result to this?
Yeah, what's so interesting about this is that we know that, a bunch of people will deny it. I've now seen that the Secretary of Defense, James Mattis, who puts the security and interests of the country first, as we know, has denied the quotes attributed to him because he would like to continue to serve and continue to save the country from Donald Trump. And it's just going to be an interesting next couple days. I don't know how Jay Sekulow, John Dowd has left the White House, and he's also denying sort of the way some of the things were portrayed in the book. But Jay Sekulow is still in the president's employ as one of his lawyers, and is described in the book as, you know, taking part, playing Trump in the reenactment in the Office of Special Counsel, not in front of Mueller's team, in front of Mueller, making the case with John Dowd that the president lies so compulsively he can't take an interview with the special counsel or he'll perjure himself. So this is so incredibly humiliating. It's Bob Woodward. He has a reputation. He has tapes. He has emails. The president is going to, in the state he was already in, which wasn't great, if you looked at his tweet last night, basically saying Jeff Sessions was supposed to cut to, you know, crooks in Congress a break because they're Republicans.
He's
suffer such a humiliation from this, and it's going to make him so angry. I just can't imagine, you know, how we skip past this, because as I said, some people might have to resign or they have to continue to deny it, but internally, there's going to be a lot of pain for people who are appearing in quotes in this book.
Yeah. I mean, here's the great conundrum of the 21st century, though. If you are a John Kelly or a Jim Mattis or even a Jeff Sessions, who I think most people don't in the United States didn't have a ton of abiding respect for when he was named Attorney General, but love him now because he at least seems to want, he seems to understand what the job of the Attorney General is and respects the Department of Justice. That if you don't have people who respect the institutions that they represent, respect the presidency, respect the country, he could put dead enders in there, and that, and you see that quite often in failing governments, where they put just, you know, the crazy folks that couldn't get jobs and anything else. There were people like that on the campaign, right? You had, but their names were Manafort and Flynn and others who were really kind of at the end of their careers trying to hold on to something. That they were dead enders, and look what happened with that. So just imagine
right,
what
and
would
also,
go in.
I mean, he's just looking for yes men. And so first it was he was looking for experts. Now he thinks he's grown into the presidency. He pleased everybody with the selections of Mattis and Kelly, originally Tillerson, H.R. McMaster, on and on. Now they're all, you know, gone or it's getting really shaky. And the idea is that he would put in, as you said, maybe the C-team, but just people that are yes men that will not, no matter what he asks, will always say yes. And, you know, Corey Lewandowski as Secretary of Defense is not something I want to wake up to the news of tomorrow.
No. God, no. AB, with this book, I think the biggest pushback I'm hearing is about the anonymous sources. And we all know as reporters and great journalists, if you get anonymous sources, you have to rely on some of them because they're senior people who would risk their jobs and their livelihoods if they were to, you know, show who they were. But that, you know, a Woodward, a type of someone of his esteemed journalist, an investigative journalist like him, would get a second, you know, source or wouldn't just run with, you know, straight anonymous sources. And that, you know, you feel as if there is substance to what he says. But then the pushback from people like Mattis and Gary Cohn and others has been so strong and so explicit, it leaves a lot of people wondering, is some of this to sell books or is this really just Woodward?
I obviously I can't prove any of this. I don't really think that Bob Woodward is going to blow up his career and start making up stuff about the Donald Trump White House that's consistent with a lot of the whistleblowing we've already heard. There's a far more likely chance that people want this to come out and then want to deny it. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to quit and leave Corey in charge, than the notion that Bob Woodward is going out into the sunset and instead of, you know, retiring to the villages in Florida, he wants to make up an entire book with fake sourcing about the Donald Trump White House. It's just not, he offered people deep background. I haven't read it. They say there's a lot of actual documentation, and now right. Axios was reporting tonight that he has tapes of these conversations. So background, I mean, he's not going to reveal the tapes, but again, what are the chances that people wanted this out there
right.
and then have to deny it to stay in the employ of the administration to do what they think is their patriotic duty,
yeah.
mm-hmm. which is to constrain the impulses of a president who refuses to learn the issues and you know, wants to smash norms and is unfit for the office.
Well, and that's what comes through when you hear the anecdote about economic advisor Gary Cohn pulling a letter from the president's desk, Woodward says, to try to withdraw from a trade agreement with South Korea so that he was worried about dangerous impulses and he didn't want him to see it. And according to Woodward, Bob Woodward, Cohn said he never noticed it was missing and seemed very relieved by that.
Right, and this is consistent. In February, he tried to convince John Kelly that we had to pull all of our troops and resources and backup out of South Korea. And John Kelly managed to keep it a secret. I mean, not actually managed to stay a secret for months and months and months. But that's no small idea of President Trump's. This isn't the first time we've read reporting like this. We read reporting in Politico a week ago that he looks down on Jeff Sessions' law degree from the University of Alabama and makes fun of his accent and trashes him. So much of this is consistent with stuff that we've already heard. That's why not only is it Bob Woodward and it's not Omarosa writing the book, but it's consistent with the fact that we've heard many times that people work around the president to protect him from himself.
Let's talk about that tweet you mentioned a little bit earlier, the tweet in which yesterday, I can't even remember now.
Last night.
Last night, thank you. I woke up to it this morning, in which he tweeted about basically asking that Jeff Sessions, why is the Justice Department going after his Republican allies in Washington in an election year where they could lose the seats? And he's talking about Duncan Hunter out in California, and Chris Collins. I know Kevin Collins. I'm very confused. Chris Collins in New York, and I mean because they're Republicans. You can't do that. They're Republicans. That's impeachable.
It's so interesting because Judge Napolitano, Andrew Napolitano, said that on Fox today. I'm sure that the president wasn't expecting that from him, but basically, it's not only unbelievable that he would reveal his true thoughts like this, that a continued reveal in tweets that he believes that he's running sort of like a mob and that the Justice Department is there to really, save everyone from liability if they're an ally of the president's and protect them and make sure that they are above the law. But then he also is actually continuing to implicate himself in the Mueller probe, if you're looking at thresholds of corrupt intent for obstruction of justice and stuff like that. It's just completely stunning. And to me, what was so upsetting, and I'm writing about this week, is, President Trump is telling Republicans exactly what he's going to do, and they're pretending that they can't hear him. But the only Republicans who responded to the tweet last night, which is one of the most over-the-top things he's ever said or done, to pile on Jeff Sessions or to basically try to use the Justice Department to protect his friends and punish his political enemies, right, is that the only respondents were Ben Sasse, the gadfly, Justin Amash, the gadfly, sort of famous Trump critics, and then Flake, who's retiring, and Ryan, who's retiring. And everyone else pretended that they got stuck in their locker and couldn't get out, and they never looked at electronics today, and they don't know what, they've been too busy to really have an opinion on that.
Right. That you can't, again, what he's saying there is you can't indict these people, Jeff Sessions. They're Republicans, and we need them in November. And I mean,
but not one. What members are? I mean, you don't have to be friends with Duncan Hunter or Chris Collins to just say, no, actually, this is the Justice Department. We have a rule of law in this country. And all froze.
Right. And the problem is, it's not like they just he calls them Obama era investigations. They're really not. The Duncan Hunter investigation is the developments in it are more recent. And it's like, this is not. I know. I understand what he's trying to do politically. It's like, well, Obama did this, and I don't know why they just keep going on with this. It's Jeff Sessions. What, is he crazy? Why is he letting the Obama people do this? It's not the Obama people. It's the Sessions people. These are his people. If he wants to stop it, he should try that. I suggest the president fire Jeff Sessions tonight and then stop those investigations so he has a nice election in November. Let's see where that falls.
I just can't believe that a week ago, and I'm sure I have my day, my day's wrong in terms of the math, but he basically said that the head of NBC was going to be fired for incompetence because Lester Holt, basically faked their interview on tape when the president revealed,
right,
15 months ago that, he was firing Comey over the Russia investigation. And it's like when he basically told someone that the Access Hollywood tape wasn't his voice. And this is, it's Obama-era investigations, Roe, if he wants them to be, okay?
Yeah, I know, I got it, AB. But he also, by the way, is saying that he would like to pull the license from NBC.
That's what he did this morning. He
because they released the Access Hollywood tape, and it said this Andy Lack, and they're going to go after them, and they're going to look into the license. Well, you can't do that, actually. And NBC doesn't have a license to broadcast except on its local television stations. Those are licenses, but they have a network that you can't stop if you want to. And then when did Duterte become a more reasonable guy, right? Duterte, the crazy Filipino dictator, is in Israel going, I didn't really mean the Holocaust was a good thing, right? And now all of a sudden you got Trump trying to stop, you know, pull the plug on NBC. It's like, I can't believe what I'm, some mornings, I just can't believe right. it. And I had to put it aside because we got big stories here in Chicago. You got the Rahm Emanuel thing. Otherwise, I'd have been really hysterical. Thank God Rahm Emanuel said he's not going to run for mayor again here. So I didn't have to lose my mind over reading the president's Twitter feed.
You were distracted because there was a lot
some
to
some people
digest.
Know their limits.
Yes, I do. And I don't. But in this particular case, I chose, my cardiologist called me and said, put your phone down. Put the phone down.
Yes.
All right, AB, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right, AB Stoddard. You can read her on the Hill. Oh, I'm sorry. No, actually, she's now Real Clear Politics. She used to be at the Hill.
Oh, right. That's right.
RealClearPolitics.com.
Moved over there.
Yep. Yes.
Been there for a while.
I can't keep up with where these people going.
Do you ever read a Donald Trump tweet in the morning particularly and then have to reread it to make sure there is the check mark there and it really is from him and it's not like The Onion or something? I mean, it just seems like some of them become so over the top and so crazy that you would think, could this be true?
Yeah.
Is this possible?
I think it's possible. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis.
Yes.
Don't forget, I got coming up in just a few minutes, a pair of 3-day general admission tickets to Riot Fest in Douglas Park, September 9th, 14th through the 16th, featuring, you got your punk, you got your rock and roll, you got your metal, your indie, your roots music. Iconic albums played from front to back by Bad Religion, Cypress Hill, Digable Planets, all right there for your enjoyment. Riotfest.org. There are tickets available, but I got them for you. I got a not so much a family four-pack as a four-pack, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Don't take your parents to the show.
Not necessarily a family thing.
That's, I think, what we've found here.
Depending
that's
on the family.
Believe. Yeah. Well, I mean, the Manson family, yeah. All right. Let's talk a little bit about... Can we talk about football for a second? Because Kevin Powell has brought a guest in with him today to talk about this. It's Ryan Mundy, former Chicago Bears safety. Thank you for your service to this to this city, sir. We appreciate it.
No problem. Happy to do so.
It is, I just got to say that as I watch NFL football now, I just wonder how much it would hurt to get, I mean, I remember getting hit in eighth grade as an 8-year-old in Pee Wee. I cannot imagine how hard it is to, you know, to maintain that level, that standard of, right. of performance and all that.
You know what? We all get to that point, and I had played 24 years in total and 8 years as a pro. And in 2015, I had back surgery, and that shifted the paradigm quite a bit.
Yeah.
Looking at the game of football, back surgery, I'm over 30. That's not good math. And literally, when true. I was sitting on my couch watching the games because I was on injured reserve, I said, wow, that expletive looks like it hurts.
And yeah.
That was the first time in my life that I had thought that.
Like seeing it as opposed to being in it.
Ooh, yeah. Because so long, that was my normal. And then once that mental paradigm starts to rearrange and looks a little bit different, that's when I ultimately decided to walk away from the game of football.
Yeah.
You hear about players all the time suffering these gruesome injuries and have to go through surgery and all that, and they tell you everything they've been through medically, and then they always end the conversation with what... I have no regrets, though, and I would do it all over again. Do,
right.
do you have any regrets? Or do
zero.
You just love it so much? That
zero. You know, I say that, and I really do mean it. Football is an amazing game, and it teaches you many life lessons. And now in my current business practices, I use a lot of the things that I learned as a professional athlete in a business setting. And, you know, I have two daughters, and the question comes to me all the time, would you let your son or your hypothetical son play the mm-hmm. game? And, you know, I have to say I would at least let him try and then figure it out from there.
But you're happy you don't have to make the choice?
Yeah. Even though my wife is pressuring me for number three, it's like, no, thank you.
You know what you should really do, Ryan, is put golf clubs in their hands right now.
Right
is
now. Yeah. Like immediately. Tennis, individual sports.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
Tennis racket's an excellent idea. Although there's a lot of knee injuries in tennis, though, too.
It's athletics, right?
Yeah.
And there's different dynamics. But literally in football, you get knocked down and you have to get back up. And there's just just things about the game that teach you very valuable life lessons.
As a guy on the defense side of the field, I want to ask you about the Bears acquisition here in a second. But before I do that, I want to, because you came in to talk about Swizzle. I've been thinking about this for like months now, because you know you keep seeing these pictures of the plastic island or whatever it is out in the middle of the, there's like a continent of plastic out in the ocean.
Not even an understatement.
It's very real.
It is very real, and it's freaking me out. And everybody in my life now, my daughter, my friends are like,
don't do the straws.
Like I go to Starbucks and I get a straw and I feel bad about myself.
Or you see those signs, straws available upon request, and you're like, I'm not going to request.
Look, the White Sox eliminated straws out of the whole ballpark this year. You can't even get one at a game.
And you got the Shed Aquarium doing the Shed the Straw program. It's real.
And then you get like the paper straw, which fine, I'm all for a paper straw.
It kind of melts in your mouth, though.
It starts to collapse like a bad artery is what it does.
After your like third sip.
Yeah. Then you're sucking on it. You're like, this isn't working.
I'm tasting paper.
Right.
It's not.
There's got to be a better way. And you,
we found
my
it.
Friend, have come up with
we
a better way.
We found it.
The Swizzle,
exactly. So Swizzle is a sustainable, eco-friendly company that allows folks to reduce their plastic consumption on an individual level. And right now we have a Kickstarter campaign that we've launched about a week ago where you're able to purchase two straws and a cleaning brush in an eco-friendly, sustainable, stylish, sleek case. And we're doing very well on there, and we're looking to really continue to ramp up that activity.
Is it metal?
Yeah, it's definitely metal straws.
Okay, it's a metal straw, and it comes out in these cool colors. I've seen the pictures of it here. And then you can get either a bent, a cocktail, or a straight.
Yep.
Which is, that's on an application now. You have to fill that out. But it's really interesting because to me, the metal straw, the only doubt, and you did tell me that this isn't happening, is that the metal straw sometimes, you're afraid it's going to be metallic. You get the metal tasting for this thing. Yeah.
Right, right.
And you got that figured out?
No, well, I put it in the same context as a fork, as a spoon, a knife.
Got that figured out.
It's just another stainless steel utensil.
And you carry it with you. Is that the whole plan? That then you buy these and then they're with you?
Yes, they're able to be carried on your person. And the great thing about it is all working professionals carry a bag, and our case fits very efficiently within a work bag.
Oh, I got to get
very
me one of these.
I need these too.
This, I'm telling you, I think I might be able to get some nookie out of this. I don't know.
Would you like to use one of my reusable straws?
Yeah, no.
How would you put it?
I am not eco-friendly enough. I'm told.
Well, we made it very simple for you because now you can just throw this in your bag and pull out your metal straw.
Yeah.
And boom, there
you go. And she's going to be like, hey, all right, now you're on my team on this.
Exactly.
See what I'm doing there?
Exactly.
All right. I like what's going on there. And it comes in different colors. That's the most important thing. So you could, for every occasion, really, if you wanted to.
Yeah. We offer seven different colors right now on the Kickstarter. And as you mentioned, bent, cocktail, and straight straws. And we have a variation of case designs as well. But once we move away from Kickstarter, we'll definitely have a lot more designs available.
And so people want to buy this. What do they do?
They can visit our website, www.swizzle.com.
Okay.
And there's a link that will take you directly to our Kickstarter page.
Okay. It's Swizzle without the extra Z and without the Y. So it's S-W-Z-L-E.
Correct. No vowels in it, right?
Right. Just all except the, for the E at the end.
Got it. Sorry. Yeah. I was trying to find it.
It's at the very end. Got to get to the end. It's not only is it stainless steel, it's BPA-free, dishwasher safe, and it, as we said, comes in three different shapes. All right. Well, that is it. You've landed on something. You know, it's funny. There are a lot of Bears players, former Bears players, who are going on to these really cool like projects afterwards,
exciting.
This is kind of like Izzy Adonijé and obviously Ryan. It tells you that to me, it's one of the things you find about football players. I have found over the years in talking to athletes of all and all sports, you know, football players have kind of, there's more of a plan, I think, for a lot of guys because they realize it's going to be a shorter throw, right? And most football players go on to college. Most football players have gone to college in some level, but some actually, you know, made connections there, business connections, actually wanted to, you know, take advantage of the study that was available. Obviously, you were one of them. And so that's a really, there's a real opportunity. And I just think that some of these guys have done amazing, and this has been going on for years, but amazing stuff. So congratulations.
Thank you so much. And yeah, to your point, particularly here in Chicago, quite a few former Bears have done very well in their post-career transition.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Israel Adonijé. I'm just looking to fall in their footsteps. So
he's amazing.
Yep.
He's incredible. And you started your own VC firm as well, venture capital firm.
Yeah,
so you're
exactly.
going to be funding other projects? So
yeah. So prior
applicants?
To me starting Swizzle, I started an alternative investment management company, Tech Leap Ventures. Very innovative name, mm-hmm. technology, athlete, cut them in half, put them together.
Oh, that's what you did.
What I used to do and what I want to do now. And I invest in early stage companies within the sports, health and leisure, and digital media
sector.
I got this idea.
I got to talk to you about a few things.
Yeah, something, bro. Yeah, something
I'm going to put you through the ringer now.
No.
I've been doing this a while.
There's a lot of ideas, but we don't vet them very well.
I can imagine.
Remember, I used to have to run into people to make money, so I just don't give it away all willy-nilly.
Watch out.
It was like the Larry Fitzgerald speech at the McCain funeral, and it was so amazing.
He was awesome.
This man ran for president. I ran out of bounds. Just to tell you, think the Bears, just in 30 seconds, Bears defense going to be greatly improved this year? Sort of improved this year? What do you think?
I was already bullish on them, but now I think with the addition of Mac, they have a very good opportunity to be special.
Were you stunned by that like everybody else was?
Actually, I was. Yeah, I seen it on my Instagram feed, and I was like, okay, this is good news.
Bears will take it.
You got to take it. Don't ask too many questions. Just take it.
Right. I see what happened here, though. Cruden was like, no one's going to tell me what to do.
I think that played a role into it. But when I heard the news break, I'm like, just get pen to paper, sign this guy.
Sign it. Don't ask any questions.
I cannot believe the Raiders are trading this guy. Get him to Hellas Hall. Sign the contract.
Should I be scared? I got to run here, but should I be scared that they gave up two first round picks in 19 and 20?
No, because sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And okay. I think they already have a young enough nucleus where they could weather that storm.
All right. Go Google Swizzle, Swzle. Ryan Mundy, thank you very much, sir.
Thanks so much for having me.